Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie, low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. Well, it's good afternoon.
Absolutely. Tell us, where are you now? Go on, make us jealous.
Well, I'm in a place called the Emerald Golf Club, and just came off the 18th charity golf day today, and of course, just really enjoying it. Weather's lovely, and we're raising some money for local the foundation over here. Big order, the next pack community here, you know.
Absolutely. And are you playing any snooker out there as exhibition stuff, or is it all just?
I've been just a few exhibitions, a few charity exhibitions this week. And I've been asked, actually, the mayor have asked me to walk with him in the parade tomorrow in Latvia City and raise the flag, would you believe? So I'm looking forward to that.
Fantastic. You're a grand marshal, basically, of the Paddy's Day Parade in Thailand.
I couldn't get it in Dublin, so I had to come all the way over here.
To get any sort of recognition, you have to go all the way over there. Fantastic. Cheltenham was on during the week, and no doubt, like myself, you were looking at it and bits and pieces of it. I didn't have any bets, really. One or two tips, but they all were useless. Did you do any good yourself?
I had one winner, would you believe? And that was on the Tuesday. But I'd like to see Alex Ferguson get the first winner after all these years being involved with the horses. He loves them so much. He's had some great horses over the years, but had his first winner this year. Yeah. And, delighted for him. You know.
Didn't he get a second? Wasn't the next one as well his? I thought he got two.
He might have, I just saw the first one.
Yeah, no. No, I did. He got another one as well.
It was a great week. Amazing week.
Yeah. It was a fantastic week. There's no doubt about it. The crowds were enormous, as always, over there, and huge turnout. And I don't know, it's getting a bit out of control, Cheltenham, is it?
I know. I saw some of the scenes now with the fights of the young girls and boys, believe it or not. You know, which didn't look too savoury. Security didn't have too much control. Some of them, they'll have to sort of look to for next year, but it looked very unsavoury. But I think it doesn't take away from the great week of racing, and of course a great week for the Irish.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Not so great for the Irish last week though, Reggie. Heartbreak against the English.
Yeah, I don't think we can have too many complaints. England were much better than we expected them to be, and you know, everybody always flags it beforehand that you can't write off the English in Twickenham. There's no doubt about it. They're an amazing team over there. But I think we still felt deep down we were going to get the job done. So it was heartbreak. There's no doubt about it. But that's sport. I mean, we've played, after today, we'll have played 10 championship games in the last 2 years that you have to try and go and win. So we won the Grand Slam last year, and we've lost one game, you know, in this year's championship. So there's still a lot to go after. But there's no doubt about it. It was very disappointing last week.
Very disappointing. And it's all about sort of picking themselves up against the Scottish now today. It should be a cracking match.
Yeah, and I think they will. Scotland are a good side. You've got to give them full credit for all of that, and they will come at us. There's no question about it. But I think this Irish team at home with the crowd behind them, they should bounce back, and they should get the job done. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm going along to it anyway. It should be a cracking match. I'm really looking forward to it. I have to say it's going to be a good weekend. Although the weather here has turned a little bit, so there could be a little bit of rain on the cards for later on this afternoon, which isn't ideal. But we'll
tell
get
you
through
what,
it.
Reggie, the weather is so hot over here. We'd sort of be praying for rain. It's a little bit different.
You could say that.
It's in the 40s, and the humidity is quite high as well. You know, just Yeah.
On the back of Dubai last week, it must be very tough on you. I really feel sorry for you.
I feel like Alan Wicker at the moment. I mean, I've been travelling around a little bit. Well, I'm not involved in the Chinese tournament in Yushan that's going on this week.
Yeah.
So I thought a few days away would be quite good. A little holiday, a little bit of golf. Just fun. My legs have got a little shade of pink, Reggie, you know, so from the usual white colour.
White would be a bit of an overstatement. I've seen your legs. Blue would be a better description
anemic
of it. Yeah, that'd be a lot better description of it. And you mentioned the China Open there. Is it called the World Open or what's it called? Is it the China Open?
Yushan. Yeah, Yushan. Okay. So it's going to be a big tournament, massive tournament. They've got another tournament as well in China for next year, Chiang. So it's been really good, you know, the last few months. And all the figures for the snookers has been, you know, like 20-30% on TV across the board, right? So really great news coming out this week, snooker. And lots of news on the horizon as well. So
And all the big names are going over to China as well. You got Luca Bissell, Trump, you know, Ronnie is over there. So you can see it's being held in high stead. So like from a point of view of coverage, it's no wonder it's getting bigger when the numbers that they have over in China, in Asia in general.
Of course, snooker, it's huge. Well, I wouldn't say all the big names are there.
You're not there.
Yeah,
you're too busy doing your travel blog.
No, all the Chinese tournaments, they carry so much prize money.
Yeah.
So it makes more sense for the players to be playing in these big events in China towards their ranking and particularly going towards the seeding for the World Championship, which is coming soon, and also the Tour Championship, which is just before the World Championship. So that's only the top 12 in the world.
Mm.
That'll be on ITV at the end of March, beginning of April. So it's a big couple of weeks for all the lads, you know.
Absolutely, time too for Erik ten Hag. Big game going on FA
Cup. Big game tomorrow.
Paddy's Day. That Man United versus Liverpool on St Patrick's Day.
On Paddy's Day.
What a game for the FA Cup quarters.
Yeah,
I mean, that is amazing.
But
a lot of pressure on ten Hag though.
Yeah,
it's got to, like, people are thinking that he's got to get this win. If he doesn't, it's out.
Yeah, well, I said before, I think there may be already a decision about his future.
Mm.
That may change depending on how that match goes tomorrow and how he finishes in the FA Cup. It's the only chance of a trophy.
Yeah.
The only chance I would sort of give them is that they're playing at Old Trafford as opposed to Anfield.
Mm.
I think if it was Anfield, it'd have much of a chance. But at least in Old Trafford, they might have a sliver. And that's hard for a Man United fan saying that, against Liverpool. But, it'll be a great match. Good occasion. Great atmosphere. And maybe the crowd. And that might inspire the players a little bit. But Liverpool are a much better player, a much better team at the moment. So it's going to need something very, very special from all those players.
Yeah.
But it looks like we have a few good players back as well. Haaland might be back and there's a few more. Maybe McGuire, maybe also defence, Bissaka, maybe. But I started to plead with injuries. They have been quite a lot of time.
Yeah, and Liverpool are on such form. They were on fire during the week again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a bit embarrassing, really, the results, the home and away that they had. I think it was 11-2 overall on aggregate, you know. So their form is incredible. The 1-1 draw with City, you could argue they should have really won that game. They were definitely in control. They had a load of chances. So there's no doubt about it. It's hard it is for United fans to accept. Liverpool are the form team at the moment and the team to beat. So it's going to be a tough one. But I look as well away from the Liverpool game in the other matches, the Coventry, that match, they're the last ones that kind of are outside of all of the main one. They got a chance to create a little bit of history against Wolves. That would be a great story if they could find their way to a semi-final.
Yeah, fantastic story, isn't it? I mean, I remember, probably you remember, Coventry won the FA Cup all those years ago.
Yeah.
But, fantastic story for both teams, to get to the semi-final. Big, big match for them. And that's the beauty. And that's the romance of the FA Cup. The teams can get through. The draw opens up for them. And it's so important that even though for the top teams, they concentrate on the top four or staying in the Premiership or whatever it might be, Champions League. Mm. But I always loved the FA Cup. I grew up on the FA Cup, watching it, you know, in the big match on the Sunday. Like, it used to go on for hours, like, you know, just build up to it. And there's a certain romanticism about it.
Yeah.
And I always love it. And it'd be great to, for one of those, particularly Coventry, to get to the semi-finals.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've every chance. I mean, Wolves are a decent side, but of all the teams that are left, the likes of Man City, Chelsea, Leicester, Liverpool, Man United, Newcastle, it's the best draw they could have possibly hoped for.
Absolutely, yeah. And if Man United beat Liverpool, Reg, I hope we get Coventry or Wolves, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'd say, to be fair, if Man United beat Liverpool, I'd say Coventry would love to get you as well.
Probably, yeah.
Of all the teams that are left, I mean, I'd be looking at that going, I'll give you United. That's the easiest draw we could possibly have. City
you
are,
might be right.
City are
right.
Home to Newcastle, and that'll be a good game. But City are not really firing the way that they have done in the past. I know like they're capable of it, and they have an amazing team. Yeah. I'm not writing them off or anything else. But Newcastle might fancy their chances being the FA Cup, that they could maybe catch them off guard.
Yeah. You never know. They're a good side, Newcastle. And you're right. I think Man City are vulnerable. Mm. You know, they were very vulnerable against Liverpool last week. And Liverpool had some great chances to put them away. Just didn't get the result. But they're all over. Really on the back foot. So, yeah, they're not. They've been drawn against Real Madrid, of course, in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. That's going to be another tough match for them.
Yeah.
So, I think Newcastle would be certainly worth a City, they're just so strong and in depth as well. That's a big difference, I think, you know.
Well, absolutely. Have a keep a look at that. Will you get a chance to see the rugby at all today, do you think?
Yeah, I hope so. Another little charity night tonight that I'm playing, but hopefully they'll have the rugby on where I'm playing. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to tomorrow at the park. It'll be a long day, but to walk down, you know, and pull up the flag for the Irish, you know, and Thailand for the expats. Great, like, you know.
Fantastic. Well, the best of luck with that, I'm looking forward.
Send you a few photos.
Yeah, send me plenty of photos. I want to see what's going on, so I can be jealous. And as I'm here in the Aviva,
my nice pink legs.
Yeah, your pink legs. I'd be here in the Aviva, wrapped up Eskimo to keep warm.
It's quite funny because I asked one of the organisers. I says, "But like, I went to yours because he saw me coming in off the golf course." Mayor of the city is going to be there with me. He's probably said, "No, probably better put a pair of trousers on."
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I'd have to. Even if your legs were tanned, I'd say put them on, because pipe cleaners don't look good when you're going to a function.
No, not at all.
All right, Ken, mind yourself. Enjoy the rest of the week. Stay safe, Reg. And we'll be in touch with you soon.
And come on, Ireland. Come on, United.
It's time now for the local club scene.
Dublin Sporting Communities, funded by Comishune the Man, with the television licence fee on Sunshine 106.8.
Yes, indeed, and you're welcome back. It's time to talk to that time of the show when we talk to one of the members of the community and all of the work that's going on in a local club. And this week it's the turn of Glasnevin Lawn Tennis Club, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Paul Barry, the president of that club. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. Thanks.
Good, I'm glad to hear it, and not too bad of a morning out there this morning. Looking forward to a good day of sport, but I'm really interested to hear about your club and the history of us and the lawn tennis and the visions of the club and where it's going. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about the history of the club?
Sure, delighted to, Reggie. Glasnevin Tennis Club was formed 115 years ago, and it was noted in the Irish Times at the time. It was a lovely sunny day, beautiful weather, and a little bit of anecdotal stuff we found when we were doing the centenary of the club back in 2009, when the ladies took over the pavilion to change, the men often had to use a nearby hen house as a changing room, and I'm sure that was quite fun for them. But there was a big drought in 1911, and club members had to ferry barrels of water by horse and cart from the River Talca in an effort to prevent the courts turning into dust.
Wow.
So the club has grown from two courts at that time to now be 8 floodlit artificial grass courts. And we have a badminton hall that is mostly used for pickleball now. So good facilities, a nice lounge, recently refurbished the changing rooms.
Yeah.
And growing club.
Excellent stuff. And I mean, that's the whole point of this section of the show, is to talk about the work and effort that's going on with smaller clubs in the community. It's not fair to call your club small when you're looking at 8 courts and pickleball, which I know is a fastly growing new sport alongside paddle, which maybe older members might enjoy quite a bit more because it's not quite as fast as tennis. But, you know, that level of facility and grounds to look after, the membership must have grown quite a bit over the years. How many members do you have now?
We've just over 700 members.
Wow, that's big.
Split about 250 juniors under 18. We've about 80 in a separate category we call our young seniors. That's our 21 to 30 age group.
Yeah.
And then the balance being seniors.
And tell me, Paul, about, you know, tennis in general, and what's the state of play with it in terms of interest? You know, I've noticed with sport, and it's stating the obvious, but when we have success at maybe international level, like the rugby team are doing, or, you know, in GA, if a county team are doing well, there's interest. We maybe don't have as much of a showcase in tennis that young kids would be looking at and going, I want to do that. Is it hard to grow the sport? Or are you finding that there's lots of interest coming in all the time?
It's not hard to grow at all.
Yeah.
Ireland has not had any real success at an international level in terms of named players and megastars to follow. But at a local level, it's really, really popular. And actually, the COVID pandemic was a massive boost for tennis.
Mm.
The tennis and golf opened up, were the first to open up after restrictions. And we enjoyed, along with all other clubs, a massive boost in terms of participation. And that's actually been maintained since. So it's not just post-pandemic.
And
so people see it as a local sport, community sport, able to play in all years of your life after you've maybe given up the big ball sport in your early 30s or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And able to keep on going with players who are playing in their 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me, you know, is it a challenge for the club? I mean, tennis may have been looked at somewhat, maybe like cricket in some ways, rugby in many ways as well, has been a little bit elitist. Is it a challenge for the club to overcome that, you know, image and try and attract new players in?
We haven't had that issue in particular.
Good.
So we've had a focus of trying to keep our membership fees low. So it's £100 odd for a junior. It's 300 odd for an adult member, and then we offer a lot of discounts for family members. Okay. So we've been able to keep it reasonably affordable while still trying to maintain our facilities.
Excellent. And what are the other challenges for the club? I mean, I'd imagine, as you said, if you're keeping the membership fees low, maintenance and everything else is going up and only going in one direction. So I suppose finance and maybe even pressure. I'm sure the land is worth a fair few quid at this stage where it's located. Are there those pressures from outside to try and come in and take it over?
Yeah, no, there's no pressure on the land. It's owned by the HSE or the Northwestern Health Board or somebody's health board anyway. It's owned by, so we don't run a 100-year lease at the moment from 2001. So we don't have any of those kind of pressures from developers. We do have pressure on our land and that we don't have enough space to do all that we would want to do to allow members to play. So our courts are very, very busy.
Yeah.
Similar to most other clubs in Dublin. So it can be difficult to get a court at times, especially at your preferred peak time.
Absolutely.
But the rest of the finances, we have a lounge bar that is very popular with members, and we'll hold events there, hold social there. In fact, one of the biggest things about Glasnevin's history is that probably a large proportion of the people who live on the north side of Dublin who grew up in the 1950s and 60s remember the Nevin dances, and they met a lot of partners at the Nevin dances. So the social aspect has always been an important part of our fabric.
Well, that's the most important part of it in the community. Paul, it sounds like a wonderful club. I wish you every success for the future, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Reggie, thanks so much. And look, I just want to take a quick shout out to wish our 4 league teams all the best next Sunday. They're playing in the Winter League finals,
Absolutely.
For the first time we 4 times in those finals.
Best of luck to them. Excellent. Well, we wish them the very best of luck. And thanks again for taking the time.
Thanks, Reggie.
Now it's time to turn our attention to what is a very, very big weekend in the world of rugby as we look at the championship decider a little bit later on for Ireland taking on Scotland. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Irish independent journalist and, of course, left-wing podcaster Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
Wonderful. Looking forward to a great day of rugby, I have to say, although the weather is annoying me just a little bit because I've got good seats down close to the pitch, but I reckon I'm going to get soaked. So we'll deal with that. These are, you know, there's plenty of saying, well, I'd take that. Don't be giving out about having tickets. But before we get to the game later on and the other matches, I have to talk about last night and the heartbreak for the under-20s. It was a brilliant performance by that under-20s team, getting the result done, holding Scotland to nil, doing everything that was asked of them, even at the end continuing to go when the clock had gone red to try and extend that points difference even further. And then in typical fashion, the French let us down and fell apart when we needed them most. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, heartbreaking. As you said, the Irish team, who looked to be maybe a little nervous in the first half, I think it was only 7-0 at the break, yeah. Considering they were major favourites, I think people were quite surprised about that. But eventually they got on top, got the scoreboard pressure that they wanted, did their job, got their bonus point win. And to be honest, I think you just have to take your hat off to England. Like, the French team they played last night was chock full of guys with loads of senior appearances. I think there was 6 guys playing last night who hadn't actually played in this tournament up to now because they had been involved with their club sides in the top 14 in the Pro D2. So it was a real battle-hardened team they were playing. France were 21-5 up in the first half as well, and England battled back. And I'm sure a lot of people might have watched the second half on Virgin, and it was end-to-end. It was helter-skelter. And like, France were about to cross for a try to go, I think, 14 up. Yeah. England take it the length of the pitch. Like, that was the big moment. If France score there, Ireland are probably 6 nations champions today. But ultimately, they went through their campaign unbeaten. They played some really good rugby. There looks like a couple of guys there who look primed to kick on. So I think it's another really successful campaign, albeit it ends in a really disappointing fashion in terms of not getting that trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any more could have been asked of the Irish players, even when they played England, to battle back the way they did and get that draw, which kept them in contention right up to the end. And you're right, there's huge credit to the English side. At 21-5, it looked, oh my God, they're home and hosed. And but it's just amazing with the French. It's like a mindset or something, how they operate. Instead of managing games, they just don't seem to be able to manage games out or win games. Like 21-5, no team should lose. You know, that's the way it is. Especially with the power that they had, the flair that they have, the talent that they have. They should be managing their way to victory on that. But no, being France, they have to try stuff, they have to do stuff. Yes, it was a wonderful interception, no question about it. But even the interception itself just said to you, there it goes, there you go, France again. You know, you don't know what to get with them.
Yeah, like, they do seem to have a capacity to, in game, to lose their way more so than other countries.
Yeah.
But like, on the interception, I really don't think you can overstate how big a momentum shift that was. Like,
huge.
France were queuing up. I think it was a big Tuilagi carry in the run up to that. They were 3 or 4 man overlap. All the choice the last defender had was to try to make a play, and what a play he made. And that was the winning of it. Like, so, but then for France to then kind of fall apart after that, like, they conceded, I think they were 31-24 up, and they ended up losing 45-31. So that's, you know, that's a really bad collapse. Even in the second half, after the initial kind of mini England revival, yeah, France did get back on top. So yeah, it was a great game, though. It was a great advert for the competition.
For us, it was brilliant, other than the heartbreak for the 20s you felt for them. But it was a great competition, and great to see what is undoubtedly going to be some of the future talent from a senior perspective on display there, and some great futures ahead for some of them, those young men. Be interesting to see if any of them are getting a little call up north as well over the next while, now that Richie Murphy is heading that direction, because I'm sure
that'd be the first thing I'd be doing if I was Richie Murphy, making sure I have their numbers saved.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to the big day that we have ourselves today. Peter O'Mahony interviewed during the week talking about the importance of winning the championship, and let's not understate that, you know, because there seems to be people around disappointed that we're not going for back-to-back Grand Slams and everything else that goes along with that. This is still huge. I mean, we're on track to win another championship. As he said in his interviews, you've got to win 10 games to win back-to-back away from home, and winning one game away from home is a difficult thing to do. So we just have to get the job done today, and there's a lot to be gained by winning another championship and stamping ourselves as one of the top, if not the top team in the world at the moment.
Oh, definitely. I think two things can be true at the same time. It would be a great achievement. It would be a successful tournament if Ireland win today and lift the trophy. But it also would be slightly anticlimactic. I would compare where this Ireland team are at to the England team under Clive Woodward. I think there was three times, or twice anyway, they won the championship despite kind of losing their Grand Slam game. And it definitely was a mixed feeling for those players. You could just tell when they lifted their trophies. Now, their defeats tended to come on the final day, so they didn't get that great when it maybe winning moment that Ireland might get today. So I can understand some people being a little disappointed with how things have played out, but I agree with you. Peter O'Mahony spoke well about it this week. In front of a home crowd, to lift the trophy, we've only done it five times. I think it'll be the sixth time in the Six Nations era. That's not very many considering how good Ireland have been. So you can't pass these opportunities up. I think for me, the worst case scenario would actually be Ireland losing today and still winning the tournament, which, looking at the permutations, would be pretty likely unless there's a freak result elsewhere. So you just want Ireland to finish it out with a good performance in keeping with the first three, rather than kind of what we saw last weekend.
Okay, and on that, we're going to expect a bounce back from this Scottish team as well, because they are very hot and cold. There's a lot of talent in there. There's no question whatsoever. I've mentioned before and spoken to you about the fact that I think Finn Russell is the number one 10 in the world at the moment in terms of what he can offer, but it can also go other directions. You just don't know. But that is a very good Scottish team when they perform. When they're on form, they are brilliant. But it's just that, you know, unknown with them. You don't know where they're, what's going to turn up.
Yeah, I think last weekend was really damaging for them. You know, the French defeat, it obviously came down to a contentious TMO call. People thought they were hard done by. But there's no excuse for being 22-10 up against Italy when you consider yourself a top five team in the world. And results would indicate that they pretty much are. They're below the top four, but they definitely seem to have been above the rest at the moment. And then to capitulate like that, it just marks them as a very unserious team. Like, they wanted to come into this last game with the Grand Slam on the line against Ireland. They're fighting to get three wins out of five. And I know it would be a triple crown if they were to win today, but it still wouldn't be a successful campaign from my perspective, considering the fixtures, considering the start they made against Wales. It was teed up for them to have a real crack at winning the Six Nations. They've still never won four out of five games in the Six Nations era, let alone compete for winning a trophy. They haven't actually even got to, you know, the bare minimum to kind of compete, which shows the standard they've kind of failed to hit. So I think it's a massive game for them today. Like, Gregor Townsend got a new contract after the World Cup, despite flaming out in the pool stages for the second World Cup in succession. So then he comes into the Six Nations. He seems to be able to get them up for England. His record against England is brilliant. His record against everyone else is pretty spotty. So if they don't at least give a competitive performance today, it would be, I think, their ninth consecutive defeat against Ireland with Gregor Townsend as the coach. Like, I think there have to be serious questions of whether they can kind of get out of this contract, because it wouldn't be looking very rosy.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt he's under pressure to get a result. In your own paper, the headline on the front page is Grudge Match. David Kelly, your colleague, speaks on the inside about bust-ups, buses and boardrooms, the roots of a hostile rivalry. I've played Scotland many times. It's always been an incredibly tough game. But I've never felt that there was any, certainly not in my day, that there was any kind of bitter rivalry or grudge match. It was just that it was a damn hard match to win, and you knew it was going to be. Has it changed in recent years, do you think? Is there more to this game than just going out and winning a game in the Six Nations?
I think so. I think if you watch the Netflix documentary, certainly from the Scottish perspective, there seems to be a lot of pent-up anger and frustration, and I'd say jealousy. I think a lot of Scottish rugby people look on and think, comparable nations, how have Ireland streaked so far off the horizon that we can't even see them anymore. And the record speaks for itself. As I said, Gregor Townsend's lost all 8 games he's played against Ireland. His record against England, as I said, is very good. They don't understand why they just can't get a grip on Ireland. And I think the way Ireland treat them in the sense that they don't respect them. They just go out and they do the job no matter what the circumstances are. Like the game in Murrayfield last year is a case in point. Ireland have Keane Healy at hooker, Josh van der Fleer thrown into the lineouts. They're decimated by injuries. I think Scotland were leading by a point at the break, or maybe trailing by one. It was very much in the melting pot. And you saw from the Netflix documentary, Gregor Townsend is like, oh, second half is our time. Yeah. Ireland go out and pull away and win by 15. Yeah. Like, that just sums up the rivalry. And I think Scotland players, and you heard the way they were talking before the World Cup game, Blair Kinghorn saying, oh, well, we're going to win this. We figured them out. And Peter O'Mahony made a very kind of pointed remark afterwards, kind of, well, like, yeah, how did that go for them? So I think there definitely is needle.
Yeah, I know. It's great. And we need that. We need that little bit of bitterness. I suppose it's the Celtic blood, maybe, you know, where there's bound to be a bit of jealousy looking at us and wondering about our success and how they could emulate it. But at the end of the day, I'd say a bit like everything that's going on with this Irish team at the moment, where everybody seems to be turning on them and calling us arrogant and calling us this, that and the other. I'm actually delighted about all of that because it means they're worried about us. It means, like, for years that was what people said about New Zealand. You know, they went on about them and talked about, they've an arrogance in rugby. They think they're better than everybody else, to this, to that, and the other. And it was all down to the fact that they were so successful, they were so good, and we were somewhat jealous of their success. And I love when people start going on like that about Ireland because it means we're successful.
Yeah, and I think the opposite used to be said, that Ireland were almost too, like, or there was a lack of confidence to compete against the best teams. And, you know, Ireland were capable of a one-off performance, but did they have the mentality to sustain it over seasons and campaigns and competitions? And that's definitely changed. And I think that's a byproduct of that. Other nations, naturally, as you said, aren't going to be, we're not the kind of lovable Irish anymore. We've now become the target on our backs. You saw the way England were loving it. Like, they celebrated that win, yeah, like it was a trophy at stake. And in some ways, well, it wasn't a trophy. To take that scalp of Ireland now is huge. Like, the only games they've lost since the start of 2022 was France away, New Zealand and New Zealand, that game last weekend, and the World Cup. And each one was treated like a huge seismic defeat, and the other team took a lot from it, because that's where the Ireland team are now.
Yeah, and it's brilliant, and that's what we want. Just to finish on Ireland and Scotland, where and how do you think Scotland will go after Ireland? Have you spotted any sort of weaknesses that they'll be looking at to try and unravel us?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I'm just looking at the window now at the weather. Mm. It doesn't seem to suit Scotland's style of play for sure. Whereas Ireland, the power they have on the bench. Like, the question when Ireland play Scotland, and the reason I think we've been so successful against them, is they struggle with Ireland's power. They don't have a front five traditionally that can match up with what Ireland can offer in the last 2, 3, 4 seasons. And the weather today would indicate that it won't be a massively free-flowing game unless it changes massively. So will Finn Russell be able to open his box of tricks? Will Duhan van der Merwe be as prominent with front football? I'm not sure. So unless the Scottish pack can take a massive leap forward, I think it'll be a tough day for them.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully that will be the case. And I see your prediction in the paper is 29-17 in favour of Ireland. So let's hope that comes to pass. The other big game, and of course that could have big bearings on what we're doing as well, is of course the France-England game. Fabien Galthié has named an unchanged side for this one. It's just hard to know. I mean, like, England were fantastic against us. That's the best we've seen them play in many a year. But can they back it up? Will they be exhausted after that effort against us? And we do know that this is a French side that are under massive pressure, and their coach is under massive pressure. They need a result. And if they were to lose against England, those age-old rivals of theirs, it would be almost unforgivable. Would it be the end of Galthié, do you think?
It could be. I suspect he might get a little longer, even if they were to lose today. But as you say, you don't really know with France. This game is so fascinating to me, exactly for your point. Can England back that up? It's one thing in front of a vociferous Twickenham crowd against Ireland, who had this big target on their backs and producing this performance. Can they sustain it? Like, as you said, that was the best England have played, I'd say, since the 2019 World Cup semi-final, which indicates how far above their recent standard they reached. Can they hit that peak again 2 weeks in a row? Like, we look back to the World Cup, South Africa against France were really, really good. They struggle against England the following week. It is hard to go back to back with that kind of emotional pitch and that physicality and that intensity. And the French team, like, Galtier kind of seems to have stumbled upon his best side of the championship against Wales. Like, he could finally call on Mia Fou from Toulouse, who a lot of Leinster supporters will be familiar with. Thibaut Flamand in the second row as well from Toulouse was finally fit. So that's a massive boost to have those guys on second row. Like, Nolan Le Grec was a lot better than Maxime Luchu has been at number nine. You saw, and Thomas Ramos back into out half. So he's made a lot of changes and they seem to be a lot more fluid with these changes. So I do think France will win today. But for England, if they can kind of get close to matching that performance and even a close defeat, I think they can take a lot from that. Like, it would be very difficult to go to France and win, especially after last weekend. But as long as they don't take a two or three steps back and revert to that turgid style we've seen and deliver an insipid performance, I think they can take a good bit from the last couple of weeks, because they have New Zealand twice in the summer, so it doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll with bated breath, we'll be watching that one later on after our own game. Then, of course, just to finish it off in our discussion, Wales, Italy. Italy, you know, it's a strange one with Italy. To me, they're playing the best rugby of their championship for many a year, yet we nilled them. I mean, we destroyed them in our game. But in every other match, they've been a contender and winning and drawing and going after things. And here they are going away to Wales. And we don't know where Wales are, because I can't work them out. They have a number of decent players that are playing well, and they are blowing very, very hot and cold. You see a very agitated and nervy Warren Gatland in post-match interviews, and being, you know, awkward is the word I'll use. And yet there's only 7 points with the bookies in the difference here for Italy. What do you make it today? Where do you see that one going?
I think it's fascinating as well. It's funny, we've gotten to the stage where if you look at the two team sheets, I'm not sure you take the Wales team over the Italy team anymore, which is really stark thing to say considering their histories, even their recent histories. But Italy are playing with confidence. As you said, that Ireland game seems a massive aberration now. Obviously, when they go up against the top three or four teams, they've really struggled in the last, you know, 8 months, you know, France and New Zealand at the World Cup. Obviously, the French game was different this time around. But I wonder, did they kind of expend all their emotional energy last week? Like, the emotional scenes on the pitch. I talk about England having to back up a big emotional home win. Italy hadn't won at home since Declan Kidney's last game in 2013 in the Six Nations, which is mad to think. Like, that's two generations ago. Mm. So it was a massive day for them. But if you're looking at it just from the rugby perspective, I think they have a great chance today. Like, Wales, as you say, they're young. They don't know how to win really yet. But they are under massive pressure at home. If they were to lose, like, all the goodwill Gatland would have banked for building the young team and all that narrative goes out the window. Then they're just a bad team who got the wooden spoon. If they get a win today and play well, Gatland can point to various green shoots and say, I'm building for the future. But I think the result today is massive for Wales. And I think it's more important for Wales than Italy. So that's why I think Wales will get the job done. I think the desperation of that George North's last game for Wales might just be enough for them. But I'm expecting it to be close.
And Capuzzo, of course, out. He's the one everybody looking for, fullback. Adds that little bit of flair. So that might just be the little bit of edge that they needed, or the bit of an unknown that they might have needed to get across the line for Italy.
Yeah, exactly. He's a big loss. He's been lighting up the championship when he's been fit. Unfortunately, his frame is quite slight. Yeah. He does seem to pick up a lot of injuries, even at club level. You often watch a Toulouse game and it cuts to him sitting in the stands. So I think he needs to maybe get a little more robust, which is difficult with his frame. But when he is on the pitch, he's electric. And I wouldn't underestimate getting Louis Lina in from Harlequins, Michael Lina's son. Yeah. I think he was born in Italy when Michael was playing there back in his playing days. So he's decided to throw his lot in with Italy midway through the Six Nations, which is a great kind of mid-competition signing. And he could be on the score sheet again today. He's very lively whenever I've seen him with Harlequins. So he'll be a big boost to Benetton as well going forward. So excited to see what he can do for Italy.
Okay, it's time now for GAA, another action-packed weekend. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the one and only Sean Lane. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Ah, never better. What a great weekend of sport we have lined up, as always. Very excited about it all, but there's plenty happening. We're going to start first in the GAA. We'll talk about the Camogie. A few good games last week. Good win for Dublin.
Yeah, Reggie, we spoke about it on the show last week, and I thought Dublin might be up against it, Reggie, but I went over to watch it and they absolutely came out of the blocks flying and went 1-8 to 2 points up. Had a comprehensive win over a very, very strong Limerick team. So puts them back in the running for promotion, Reggie, which is great. But the big surprise was in 1A. Tipperary went to the All-Ireland Champions in Cork away and won 2-10 to 1-10. Now, it we'll cover it more next week or the week after, but it leaves Division 1A with four teams, Waterford, Tip, Galway and Cork, all level on top in a six-league team. So very, very tight and some excellent games coming forward. So I'm looking forward to covering them next week.
Absolutely. OK, well, ladies football as well. I see Armagh are still flying high, 5 wins out of 5. Who have they got the weekend?
Yeah, they're playing Mayo, Reggie. They are flying, and we didn't give them huge credit for the first game or two, but we're massive supporters of them here for the last couple of weeks. I've had a look at some of the tapes and they've some absolutely smashing players. I expect them to win and beat Mayo, but Mayo have improved. So if they win, Reggie, they'll be in the Division 1 final, and that's some achievement because they only won the Division 2 final last year, so that's a great achievement. The big game then behind it is Meath play Kerry, and the winner of that will more than likely play Armagh in the league final. Both of those started off flying, but recent form they've dipped with both of them, but I expect Kerry just to get across the line there. From a Dublin perspective, Mick Bohan will be happy. What we said had happened, Reggie, is happening. He has a couple of good players back with Hannah Tyrrell and Jennifer Dunner back, and my sources tell me that Nicole Owen and Sinead Ahern are added to the panel as well, so that's really strengthening the team up. They're playing Cork at home, who aren't going well, so I expect Dublin to come through there.
Oh, excellent. So we keep an eye on that and hopefully they do come through there. So in the hurling, some key games, semi-final places up for grabs. What ones are you looking at in particular? How much are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, looking forward to them a lot. Reggie, we covered all 6 games last weekend, so obviously there's more football and important games this week in the football, so we'll have Brian Talty on shortly. But certainly a big game that stands out to me is Wexford and Cork. From a Wexford point of view, we've said they're going well, they're unbeaten, they've won one game the last day against Waterford, and some of the players that they've unearthed some really, really good players. Conor Hearn, Seamus Casey got 1-9, Reggie, against Waterford. And also Keane Bourne, a corner forward. Now, as you know, when you're playing Waterford, it's fairly condensed defensive, but he got 5 points from play. That's absolutely fantastic. Keith Rossler's getting his defence properly set up better. Shane Reck and Matthew O'Hanlon is back in the squad as well. So they're all, Conor Murphy in there as well. But I mean, he won the game against Waterford the last day. He had no Lee Chin, he had no Conor McDonald, he had no Rory O'Connor. So they're in a really, really good spot, and I expect that they, you know, strategically he'll say, I need another game after this Cork game against top class opposition. So I see Wexford throwing the kitchen sink at Cork the weekend. From a Cork point of view, they started very poorly, Reggie, they lost the first 2 games, but they're after beating Waterford, and they had a huge, huge win, scoring 5-28 the last day against Offaly. So, you know, they found it. Alan Connolly got 3 goals the last day. We were saying that some of the young lads had to step up to play. So there's one. And Jack O'Connor stepped up again, along with Conor Lahan, with a couple of points. The other really big game then is Galway versus Limerick. That's a doubleheader, Reggie. Game, and it is. If you listen to Henry Shefflin's interview last week, basically what he said was he was happy with the league so far. They weren't impressive against Dublin. There was nothing in it after 55 minutes. He'll be disappointed that Dahi Burke and Conor Whelan both got red cards, so they can't play against Limerick. But he still can rely on Conor Cooney, Evan Nyland, Tom Monaghan. And a very interesting thing happened in Galway this week or the week before. He's invited Johnny Glynn back onto the squad. Now, Johnny Glynn's about 6'5", Reggie, who could play in the front row this afternoon with the Irish team. But I suspect he's bringing him back. He's still living in New York. I suspect he's bringing him back Because last year, if you remember, Reggie, when Galway got under pressure with Limerick the second half, they just couldn't win their own puck out. From a Limerick point of view, there's nothing we can say about that. They brought back Aaron Gallan the last day, Keane Lynch, they just got over Tipperary, but they did concede a late goal. John Kiely was very outspoken. He didn't want to concede three goals, but he did. But he still has Sean Finn and Declan Hannan to come back. So I just see Limerick maybe having a little bit too much for Galway here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trying to get Johnny Glynn up to pace is probably going to be the real challenge Shefflin will have on that. But if he can get him up to that, then he can cause havoc.
Yeah, and I suspect, and we did say this over the last couple of weeks, that Henry was really looking at a couple of new players on top of what he had. I don't know the from a back's point of view, Páraic Mannion is still there. Young Grealish got the line as well, and Dahi Bourke is back. But, you know, I don't know what the story is with Gerard McInerney yet, but we'll find out.
Excellent stuff. Okay, look forward to that one. That'll be a hell of a game, Galway versus Limerick. They both will. Wexford against Cork as well is going to be one that'll be intriguing. Time to turn our attention to football now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Brian Talty. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Excellent now, not a bother. Of course, it's round six, Sean, of the National League, and some very intriguing battles in there.
There is indeed. Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Good, Sean. Yeah.
That's good. Brian, I suppose I'll have to start off with your county versus my county in a doubleheader in Salt Hill today. Galway going reasonably well with a load of injuries as we've already spoken about. But I suppose Desi Farrell will probably be going down saying, gee, the Leinster Championship, I could probably get to a final. You're not too difficult there. I could do it more games. Dublin will surely try and win this game down in Galway with, you know, as best they have.
Well, fortunately for us in Galway, they always try to beat us. I don't know why that is, but anyway, yeah, it's going to be a big one, really. Dublin are absolutely flying, Reggie, Sean. You can see that they're playing with great power, pace, lots of aggression. They're tackling really hard up the field, turning the ball over, and played really well the last day. And this has come now in the last two games. And I think we've talked a good bit about, you know, that they used to play Con O'Callaghan out around the middle of the field and everything like that. We were wondering what was going on. He's moved into the full forward line. The ball is moving into him quickly when they can. And that's causing huge, huge problems, you know. And you're going out against the Galway team, you know, the spine of the team is absolutely gone. You know, I mean, they're playing without Conroy, Tierney, Comer, McDade, Walsh, Silk. Huge amount of players who are very important to Galway. And you know, when they went to Derry, I think I said to you, I was very worried that they were going to get a batter. They didn't get it. And the young fellas are showing up really well. And I think Páraic Joyce would be really happy with that. So, yeah, I'd say Galway are looking forward to this game today. It's a tough one for them. And I don't think they're up to Dublin standard at all at this stage. And I think, you know, Dublin are going to win it by 4 or 5 points. But tactically, Galway have changed around a wee bit. You were talking about Johnny Glynn coming back to the hurlers. They now have Niall Daly at full forward, 6'5" at full forward.
And, I see that, yeah.
Caused a lot of problems against Monaghan the last day. Galway scored 3 goals, kind of putting the ball into him. So that will be an interesting one to see. Will they put the ball into Daly today and see how Dublin compete in the air with him?
Yeah, and everybody, when they talk about Dublin, they, you know, and this is going on for 10 years, they always say, oh, the Dublin full-back line isn't great in the air and all that, but they still don't seem to shift too many goals.
Dublin tactically are so aware. Like, I mean, Dublin, you know, against Kerry, Kerry went toe-to-toe with them. They were well able to they were capable of taking that on. The last day, they had the pack defence against Derry. They were capable of doing that. As you say, over the years, everybody is talking about the full-back line. But, like, They analyse the game so well. They will have analysed the Galway game against Monaghan the last day and the fact that Daly was influential in some of the goals, you know what I mean? So they'll have their plan in place. You see Brian Fenton slipping back in front of Daly and this kind of thing. So, no, it will be an interesting one, though. But hopefully, you know, John Dibley is involved in Dublin football a long time. He's a Galway selector now. He knows what needs to be done. Have we the players at the moment to do it? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. I suppose the other game, Derry are playing Mayo, and Derry were the form team, but a lot of people were disappointed that he didn't put out his full team the last day against Dublin and probably robbed us all of a great spectacle up in Derry. But he Mickey Hart has bigger plans for this team. How do you see Mayo and themselves getting on, Brian?
Yeah, Mickey's the shrewd operator, and I think we've talked on this programme a lot about Mickey wanting to win every game. So it was amazing the last day, so that he didn't play Conor Glass and a few more of the lads against Dublin. And you said to yourself, what is he thinking? Is he thinking about a league final here and maybe coming out with his full team against Dublin on that occasion? But we won't know until we see what happens. But Derry were the form team going into that, you know, and as you say, they didn't play their full squad. So it'll be interesting to see how they go against Mayo. I thought Mayo played really well the last day against Roscommon. Their second half performance was very, very good. And what's happening with Mayo, Sean, is that they're coming up again with some really good defenders.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What they need to do is to get this forward line going. Like now they're depending on Fergal Boland at the moment and Ryan O'Donoghue. So they need to get their forward line going. I mean, if you look at their defence, they've come up with Enda Hessian, Rory Brickington, Stan Callan. The last day, Dunica McHugh was man of the match, another halfback. So they need to get their forward line going. It'll be interesting to see how they can do that today against the Derry defence. It's a packed defence. Dublin did really well against them the last day. How will Mayo do again today? And I think that's the big thing for Kevin. He needs to get his forward line going, and he needs to get a bit of physicality around the middle of the field as well against Derry. So an interesting game. You know, Derry will be all out. Derry are all out to get to the league final.
Yeah.
Sean, they're probably the only team that are saying we really want to get to this league final. Mayo are kind of ifing and butting about it. So I think it'll be a really tight game. You know, I like the Mayo defence, as I say. Matthew Ryan is back around the middle of the field. The forward line needs to get going. If that forward line gets going, it could be very tight. They'll go for Derry, you know, by a point or two in that game.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you on that. And your neighbours, my mother's county, the Rossies against Kerry. And I have to say, Brian, I'm struggling to understand Kerry's performances, you know, to date in the National League. I mean, that's a huge game for Roscommon, and we do know the Rossies now will throw absolutely everything at Kerry to try and get a result here.
They certainly will, you know. They need that result. What amazes me, and I read during the week, Sean, that they are one of the lowest scorers in the league, and it amazes me because of the talent that they have in that forward line. So. The big thing again for Davy Buck is how does he get the ball to that forward line? How does he get that forward line moving? Like you look at the, you know, we've talked about Derek Craig a good bit because we saw him in Sigerson. You know, Ben O'Carroll is up there, Enda Smith is up there. What a forward line, you know what I mean? But how is it that they're scoring so low scores? Like it's just, I think around the middle of the field. They need to get something around the middle of the field. Since yeah, Unton Harney is back, Tiger Rourke is back, so they might be much better around there. How would they deal with the Kerry forward? Like, that's going to be another big thing as well. You know?
Yeah. And how are Kerry going, though, Brian? I mean, as I said,
they played well the last day.
Yeah.
The last day, Sean, you know, against Dublin, their midfield wasn't great. The last day, it was way much better. Dermot O'Connor was man of the match. Joe O'Connor played well. They won a lot of their kickouts. Their teamwork, I talked to you about their teamwork up front.
Yeah.
Where they kind of left it to David Clifford, or I think it was talking to Reggie. They left it to David Clifford by himself when he gets the ball. The last day, there was a lot more teamwork up front, and it did pay off. And they tackled more intensely as well. And they saw a little bit of a battle out in the sidelines, so that lifted them a little bit. Their performance the last day was way, way better than against Dublin. But, like, the caveat is, they weren't playing Dublin. You know?
Well, that's true, all right. We don't normally cover the Division 2 games, Brian, but 20, 25 years ago, Meath and Cork playing in the National League, they'd be All-Ireland champions and probably the other one would be runner-up. They both have probably fallen from grace, but John Cleary is doing some great work in Cork and Colm O'Rourke in Meath. How do you see that one going? And it's a serious game for both counties.
Yeah, back in that day, there used to be a lot of battles around there.
Yeah.
It's hugely changed. I think this is a really important game for Cork. Cork have to, it's do or die for Cork in this game. Well, they have another game left, but it's against Armagh away, I think, or maybe at home. But they have to win it, because if they don't win it, they're down at the bottom of Division 2. They're probably not going to get to a Munster final.
Yeah.
Because they play Kerry in the semi-final, which means they're in trouble as regards playing in the Sam Maguire. So this is a vital game for them. And I think they went away there for 4 days to Portugal to prepare for for this and for the rest of the championship. So you'd expect a big game. They were good the last day. I think they Brian Hurley would be the main man in the forward line for them, but the likes of Matty Taylor coming up from the half back line, Chris O'Jones was very good, and Conor Corbett at full forward was very good. So they're getting their forwards going, and Kevin Walsh from Galway is involved with them.
That's right, yeah.
Sean. So I would expect to see their defence tightening up as well. I thought they were good the last day. They played with a lot of pace and a lot of power in the game as well. And I think they'll beat Meath today because
right.
they have to beat Meath. If they don't beat Meath, they're in huge trouble.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I have to leave it there, lads. But before I let you go, Brian, a just quick one. What impact do you think Jim McGuinness is going to make on this year's Ulster Championship?
Yeah, huge impact in Donegal anyway, definitely. You know, he actually begged for that gig years and years ago, and he was turned down three times. Now the county board are begging him to take it. So it's amazing the way things come around, you know. But Jim McGuinness will drive that Donegal team on. He's hugely organised tactically. He's so aware, and I think he's a qualified sports psychologist as well, Reggie. So that might be
he'll get in their heads.
He knows the psych in Donegal. He's certainly getting into their heads. And I think the other thing is, you know, from years ago, there's no excuse to take it.
Alan, how are you? Well. Can you hear me there?
Yeah, Reggie, how are you? Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Sorry, I lost you there. I couldn't get a hold of you. I was just, we were talking, myself and Sean there, about the FA Cup. But quickly, before we get talking about the FA Cup, just to go back on the SSE Airtricity, a good result last night for Shelburne.
Yeah, great result again, Reggie. And I suppose we spoke about them last week and the momentum that they've built up at the start of the season to go to Inchicore and carry that on, pick up another away victory. 16 points now out of 18 to 6 games, and that's 5 wins on the trot. So it's an incredible run of form, it really is, and an incredible start to the season. And they've already opened up a little bit of a gap. I suppose the question now is, can they maintain it? But they have a break now with the international stuff coming up next week, and they can get back to obviously the league stuff the following week, so and regroup and reset. So it's been an unbelievable start, and I think it's brilliant for the league as well. We've always said about how good it is to have Damien Duff in the league. It's even better to have him at the top of the league. Now he's not getting carried away, and he's starting playing it down at every opportunity. But it's just brilliant to see Shelburne back on top in the league.
Absolutely. And then another big result as well, when you look at the standings in the league, Bowes getting that 2-1 victory against Derry City. Derry sitting in second place in the table. So from a Bowes perspective, that was a huge win.
Yeah, massive. And under a bit of pressure, obviously, Declan Devine after his job during the week, Reggie. So I think Pat Fenlon stepped in just on an interim basis with Derek Pender as well. But you often see that with teams. It happens so often, the bounce they get with a change of manager. I'm not sure. I don't think anybody can explain as to why that happens, but they certainly got that last night. I don't think the performance was great by all accounts. Derry gifted them a couple of goals, but still they got the victory, and that's huge for them. And to have a bit of time now to try and appoint somebody and get the right man in charge and start moving up the table, because the potential at Bohemians is absolutely massive.
Rovers seem to start to get their season back on track a little bit, although they left it late last night, getting that 1-0 win away to Galway.
Yeah, they left it late, Reggie. They were very, very dominant, and you were thinking there's only going to be one winner here. And it was nil all at half time, but they were very, very dominant in that first half. The second half, to be fair to Galway, they put up a much better fight, and it was more even the game. And they had a great chance themselves, Galway, with Stephen Walsh with a header, just shaved the post. But then he made a few substitutions, Stephen Bradley, and there was a moment of quality in the match. I'm not sure if you've seen the goal, Reggie, but a brilliant, well-worked goal, a brilliant pass from Dylan Watts, a lovely touch from Dara Burns, and played it across the 6-yard box, and Johnny Kenny finished. And that's the difference, really. Galway don't have that quality for Shamrock Rovers, even though it was a frustrating second half for them. It only takes that moment of brilliance, and that's what we've seen with a couple of players, Dylan Watts with the pass and Dara Burns with the cross, and they got the goal. And it was a much-needed win, because Shelburne have opened up a 10-point gap, and I know it's very early in the season, but you don't want to let that gap get any bigger and be chasing your tail for the whole season.
No question about it. Okay, moving outside of Ireland, I have to talk about the Champions League draw. What a lineups we're looking at in April. Real Madrid taking on Man City, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, PSG, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Dortmund. The names are just icons of the sport. There's no question about it. What a juicy draws they are to look forward to in April.
Oh, it'll be amazing, Reggie. Yeah, but this is the business end now. I often think with the Champions League, the way it is at the moment, though, it's almost like the All-Ireland and the Gaelic. We're waiting for a semi-final and All-Ireland final. The competition only kicked in for two matches, and it's something similar with the Champions League, but we do have brilliant matches coming up. I was actually in Barcelona during the week, Reggie, and watched them against Napoli, and they were very, very ordinary. I was so disappointed with the standard, so I can't see them going to win it. We've got a half-decent draw against PSG. I think the only ones that can win it, really, are City, Madrid, Arsenal and Bayern Munich. And the way the draw has thrown up, two of them are going to go out in the quarterfinal. So it's fantastic games. I'm really looking forward to them. City and Real Madrid should be a final, really. It's going to be an absolute cracker. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see when they come round. But they are mouth-watering games.
Okay, I haven't got much time left, but I want you to call one for me. FA Cup, St. Patrick's Day, Man United take on Liverpool. Who's going to win?
Liverpool.
I never thought it was going to be anything else.
Say, don't worry, Reggie.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.